It is 11:04 on Wednesday, April 17th, and I'm calling the Committee on Rules and Administration to order. A quorum is present. We have Senator Frentz and Senator Miller with us virtually. And with that, I'd like to commence with our meeting today. We're going to process a few late bills, and then we're going to take up the proposal on what will be the permanent rules of the Senate. All right. With that, I'd like to invite Senator Westland. And I will remind everybody that when we are inviting people to talk about late bills, the purpose of this hearing is to understand why the proposal is late and not what the proposal does. Welcome to the committee, Senator Westland.
Thank you, Chair Murphy and members. So the bill before you is the Tax Forfeited Lands Policy Bill. And as you know, under the Tyler decision of the Supreme Court, we needed to come up with a new rubric for processing claims related to tax forfeited properties. That was a process that took a while. We wanted to make sure that we heard from all of the stakeholders, the counties, et cetera. And so we finally were able to land on a solid policy bill, and that is the bill moving forward. And that was a significant process of negotiating to get a good bill. So that is why we are late. This has gone through the Environment Committee and I believe is headed next to Judiciary, where we will have a very deliberative process.
Thank you, Senator Westland. Seeing no further discussion, Senator Pappas moves that Joint Rule 2.03 be suspended for all further proceedings on Senate File 4985 and that the previous committee report for Senate File 4985 be adopted.
So moved.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And those opposed, say no. And that motion is adopted. Senator Wicklund. We have Senate File 4570 and Senate File 4874. Welcome back to the committee, Senator Wicklund.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 4570 is our licensing and scope of practice omnibus bill. The reason this became, reason this is late is that we were planning on passing it out of our committee on the policy deadline day, but then there were a number of the proposals we wished to include that needed to go to state government and to judiciary. We thought we had the timing worked out for them to come back to my committee and meet the meet deadline, but then some of them were delayed. So we passed the bill out of the committee after the policy deadline because of that.
Thank you, Senator Wicklund. Are there questions for Senator Wicklund? Seeing no questions then, Senator Pappas moves that Joint Rule 2.03 be suspended for all further proceedings on Senate File 4570 and that the previous committee report on Senate File 4570 be adopted.
So moved.
Seeing no further questions, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And those opposed say no. And that motion is adopted. Senator Wicklund.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Senate File 4874 is a bill that came to me through Minute. And the agency said that this bill did not get introduced as early as would have been better in session. It was delayed due to communication issues with the revisor's office. Once it was introduced, then it took some time to get it scheduled in state government, and it needs to be referred to judiciary. We weren't able to meet deadline. So,
thank you very much, Senator Wicklund. Are there questions for Senator Wicklund? Seeing no questions, then Senator Pappas moves that Joint Rule 2.03 be suspended for all further proceedings on Senate File 4874, and that the previous committee report for Senate File 4874 be adopted.
So moved.
Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And those
aye.
Opposed, say no. That motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator Wicklund.
Thank you.
Senator Kupek for 2394. Welcome to the committee. How's the weather? Sorry, that was just a bad joke. Welcome to the committee. Please proceed.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Senate File 2394. While it is listed as the Physician Assistance Licensure Bill, it has actually been rolled into an omnibus bill for all of the compacts that went through the Health and Human Services Committee when this went to Judiciary. There were some questions about liability questions for all of the compacts, and we combined that language and we rolled them all into one to kind of expedite the compact process. So the reason it was late was we were held up in Judiciary by some liability questions, but that's all been resolved and just needs to go to state and local government now.
Thank you, Senator Kupak. Are there questions for Senator Kupak? Seeing no questions, then Senator Pappas moves that the Joint Rule 2.03 be suspended for all further proceedings on Senate File 2394, and that the previous committee report for Senate File 2394 be adopted.
So moved.
Thank you, Senator Pappas. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 And those opposed, say no. And that motion is adopted.
Thank you.
Senator Mohammed. Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Senate File 4890, which is to ratify the compensation plans from the Subcommittee on Employee Relations. And it is late because of number of committee stops or number of committees that were canceled due to state and local gov.
Thank you very much, Senator Mohammed. Are there questions for Senator Mohammed? Seeing no questions, then Senator Pappas moves that the Joint Rule 2.03 be suspended for all further proceedings on Senate File 4890, and that the previous committee report for Senate File 4890 be adopted. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed, say no. And that motion is adopted. Thank you. Senator Umar Verbaten.
It's really proper. Staple.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 3667 is a bill that we heard in the Higher Education Committee last week, Thursday. The way it was originally drafted, it was an appropriation that we heard after the deadline. Due to the feedback from our administration, we realized this needed to go to Judiciary, and so that is why it is late needing that second committee stop.
Thank you, Senator Umar Verbaten. Are there questions? Seeing no questions, Senator Pappas moves that Joint Rule 2.03 be suspended for all further proceedings on Senate File 3667, and that the previous committee report for Senate File 3667 be adopted.
So moved.
All those in favor, please say aye.
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 And those opposed, say no. And that motion is adopted. Senator Housechild. Welcome to the committee, Senator Housechild. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have for your consideration Senate File 4995, a bill regarding rural school funding and seasonal rec properties. This bill is running late primarily because the stakeholders' work took additional time to put this bill together in the manner in which myself and the select chairs desired the bill to be introduced. As the author, I considered alternate paths, but ultimately a new timeline was most prudent.
Thank you, Senator Housechild. Are there questions for Senator Housechild? Seeing no questions, Senator Pappas moves that the Joint Rule 2.03 be suspended for all further proceedings on Senate File 4995, and that the previous committee report for Senate File 4995 be adopted.
So moved.
Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, say no. And that motion is adopted. Senator Housechild.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Today I have for your consideration Senate File 5048, a bill regarding helium. The primary reason this bill is late is because helium is quite literally just now being discovered and explored in Lake County. The DNR began working on this language with me as soon as it became clear that a bill was needed to regulate and determine the royalties needed for the helium extraction, and that timeline did not fit the Senate's deadlines.
Thank you very much, Senator Housechild. Are there questions for Senator Housechild? Seeing no questions then, Senator Pappas moves that Joint Rule 2.03 be suspended for all further proceedings on Senate File 5048, and that the previous committee report on Senate File 5048 be adopted.
So moved.
Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And those opposed say no, and that motion is adopted. Senator Housechild, Senator Morrison. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You are here with Senate File 3561. What we'd ask is to let us know why the bill is late.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 3561, which is the Packaging Waste and Cost Reduction Act. It's a bill that aims to address our growing waste problem. This bill was delayed coming out of the Environment Committee for a second time because we were still waiting for a fiscal note. The fiscal note was not complete during the bill's first hearing in the Environment Committee. Chair Herr asked that the bill be returned to his committee to consider the fiscal note once it was completed. It was returned to the Environment Committee after meeting deadline in every other committee. So once Chair Herr saw that the completed fiscal note and acknowledged there was no general fund impact or impact on his budget target, the bill was passed out of Environment for the second time. So the bill needs to go to Finance next if the committee agrees.
Thank you, Senator Morrison. Other questions for Senator Morrison?
Madam Chair.
Senator Frantz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. Senator Morrison's being a little too modest. She also sorted through a large number of stakeholder meetings and inputs. Even by our standards, it was substantial and got to a place, I think, that makes it in the public interest and in the interest of the Senate to pass this motion and move the bill along. Thanks, Senator Morrison. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Frantz. Seeing no further discussion, Senator Pappas moves that Joint Rule 2.03 be suspended for all further proceedings on Senate File 3561, and that the previous committee report for Senate File 3561 be adopted.
So moved.
Thank you, Senator Pappas. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 And those opposed say no, and that motion is adopted. And that concludes our work on late bills. Thank you very much, members. Thank you, Senator Morrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I was wondering if we could ask Secretary Bodron a question. I see he's in the room.
He is, in fact, in the room. And, you know, of course, you can ask him a question. We would invite him to join us. Welcome to the committee, Secretary Bodron. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Leader. Secretary Bodron, we just went through a series of bills today. I don't remember if it was 11 or 12 bills today. We also did something similar a couple weeks ago or last week as well. You know, we're approaching a pretty high number here. What is a typical number of late bills that come through in a given session?
Secretary Bodron.
Madam Chair and Senator Johnson, I don't have that number at my fingertips. I could certainly retrieve it quickly. And I don't want to speculate here.
Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair, would you perceive this as a rather large number of late bills coming through the committee or a typical number of bills coming through the committee?
Secretary Bodron.
Madam Chair and Senator Johnson, and being careful working from memory, this seems like a larger number of bills for the Rules Committee, late bills for the Rules Committee to process than I've seen before. But again, I want to be very careful with those statements.
Thank you. Madam
Senator
Chair,
Johnson.
If I may, I understand that we've gotten a number of reasons today for these late bills, but I'm sitting here in my seat thinking a lot of this work needs to be done prior to deadlines. I don't know why we are continuing to have these so-called deadlines if all we do is come in and rubber stamp. You know, half of these bills that came through today, they blame Judiciary Committee once again. I'm seeing a pattern with this, and you know, not to blame individual members or anything, but I think there needs to be something addressed within either in Judiciary Committee itself so that these bills can get done, or else there needs to be a prioritization of the bills themselves. What is important and what's not important. And it just doesn't seem like we're getting that. A lot of these bills are being heard for the first time. They're saying, well, we didn't get our work done, and so we need your blessing to go past the deadline to do that. And at some point, we just need to say, we're done. We need to get these bills out the door. We've only got 5 weeks left. I think we have 17 session days, and we're not getting the work done, the priorities that the state needs. Now we're messing around with bills that may or may not be things that end up at the end of the day getting passed. So I'm just getting very, very concerned about what's happening here in this committee and on the Senate schedule. So more of a comment and then an action item, but I certainly hope that you take that to heart.
Madam Chair.
Secretary Bodden.
Just providing further information after having checked with staff, there were 31 late bills in 2023. There are now 58 in 2024. The average number since 1995 has been about 19 late bills per year. That's not the number of bills processed by the Rules Committee, but the total number of late bills.
That is a very sharp and clear answer. Thank you, Secretary Bodden. I am grateful that the legislature is working hard for the people of Minnesota, including your very skillful staff.
Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, members, we can move on then to what will be our permanent rules. And before we begin, information is in your packet. Just in terms of process, we have a subcommittee that has been doing a lot of work on the issue of our rules. This is important work for the institution and for the function of the legislature, and I want to thank particularly Secretary Bodden, who has done a tremendous amount of work in preparing this and bringing, I think, an eye to making sure our rules are both functional and modern and clear for us and for the function of the body, and to Council Stengel, who has been working with a number of members, both those on the subcommittee and others, to make sure that we have what we have before us is ready for our consideration and our action. There are a number of members who serve on the subcommittee who are not on the Committee on Rules, and I want to acknowledge their hard work as well. Senator Pratt has been working along with Senator Dibble, and I know Senator Jaskowski was in the room briefly here, working with Senator Rest in the way that we hope that members from both caucuses are working to make sure that we have a set of rules that represent the best work of this legislature and represent what we hope will be a set of rules that we can embrace and support that will aid the function of the legislature. So that is why we're here. I'm going to put before us Senate Resolution 029 that comes from the subcommittee that is for our discussion here today. And I'd like to turn to Lexi Stengel, our counsel, to do a brief overview of the document before us.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. So working off the subcommittee report, I can do a brief summary and happy to answer additional questions. You'll note that there are lots of technical changes throughout here, including changing the word shall to must, the word group to caucus, changing capitalization, making some cross-reference changes, making grammatical changes, capitalization changes, things like that. I won't be pointing all of those out as we go through. Instead, I'll talk about some of the substantive changes. There's also a summary in your packet that provides some additional detail. Through the process of the subcommittee, there were two meetings where different proposals were brought from various members. Would it be helpful, Madam Chair, to talk about the various proposals and where the changes came from?
Yes, I would appreciate that information for the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So as I go through, I'll talk about where the various changes came from. And there was one proposal, I won't use the numbers as I go through, but you'll see it several times throughout the proposal. It's SR029-5, and it's in here as a Senator Murphy proposal. That was a proposal brought from Secretary Bodden that worked with staff from the desk and other nonpartisan staff that is largely a cleanup proposal. So there are a lot of changes brought by staff. And so that's listed as a Senator Murphy proposal here, and you'll hear that several times. But know that that is largely a staff-driven proposal. So you'll see a lot of those changes in here with Senator Murphy's name on them. So with that, and if you look at this online, there's a links to the proposals. If you want to actually read them, you can access those all online from the previous hearings. So with that, I will start with Senate Rule 1. The change here comes from the Murphy proposal, and it specifies that it is the most recent version of Mason's manual that governs the Senate in all cases where Mason's is applicable. And Mason's manual is updated about every 10 years, so it's specifying which version will be applicable. In Rule 3, it strikes obsolete language related to bill introductions in the interim. This is also from the Murphy proposal. In Rule 4, it comes from a Drazkowski proposal requiring bills proposing constitutional amendments to go to the Committee on Rules and Administration. Rule 5 changes come from the Murphy proposal, and it clarifies the process for recalling bills from committee and specifies when 41 votes are required. And Rule 6 comes from the Murphy proposal. This specifies that the rule requiring referral of a resolution to be referred to the Rules Committee does not apply before the Rules Committee is established or the adoption of temporary rules for purposes of organizing the Senate. And this is from the Murphy proposal. The changes to Rule 7 come from a Senator Marty proposal, and this reorganizes the rule related to budget targets. And this is not a substantive change, but just a reorganization. The change in Rule 10 comes from the Senator Murphy proposal, and it strikes language related to uniform criteria governing how committee appointments are made. There are several changes to Rule 12, and these come from a variety of sources, including proposals from Senator Murphy, Marty, Bolden, Pratt, an oral amendment made from Senator Dibble in the last subcommittee hearing, and some additional proposals that were made in between the hearings. Going through these briefly, there strikes a reference related to certain county delegation caucuses being open to the public. There's a broad reorganization of Rule 12.1 to organize things into paragraphs by substance relating to meetings themselves, member participation, and witness participation. It requires committees and subcommittee hearings to be held in a manner that permits remote participation. It requires witnesses to be seen and heard by committee members when they're testifying. It removes all references to the COVID-19 health pandemic. It allows remote participation by members without caucus leader approval. It specifies that members participating remotely must be visible when speaking or voting. It allows members to participate remotely to be counted in the division. It requires witnesses to be allowed to testify remotely in committees when testimony is taken. It changes the term internet connection to technology connection. It strikes the requirement to post notices on Senate bulletin boards and to send notices to the House, but leaves in place the requirement that everything be posted on the Senate website. It specifies that a hearing notice that is sent on the listserv constitutes notice to all proponents and opponents of a bill. It changes the process for meeting past midnight so that a committee may extend the meeting for an hour past midnight by a vote of 2/3 of the members of the committee instead of those present. Strikes obsolete language about minutes and instead requires that minutes be taken and reflect all actions taken at the meeting. It prohibits disturbances and disorderly conduct during committee meetings and states that the chair is responsible for order and decorum. It allows the committee chair to establish written procedures for conducting committee hearings. Rule 13 comes from the Murphy proposal and states that if the Senate adjourns without setting a time to reconvene, the Senate will reconvene on the next calendar day, excluding Sundays. In Rule 14 comes from the Murphy proposal. It deletes redundant language and specifies that a tie vote on appeal from the decision of the president sustains the decision of the president. Rule 15 change comes from a Drazkowski proposal, and it amends a modified version of a Drazkowski proposal. And this change amends the admission policy to the Senate chamber and requires everybody except for members, officers of the Senate, House of Representative members, and Senate staff to be personally admitted to the chamber. The changes to Rule 17 come from a Senator Rest proposal, and it reorganizes the rule a bit so that there is a separate line for prohibiting demonstrations, and then makes some changes to consumption of water on the floor and allows staff to consume water on the Senate floor. The change in Rule 18 comes from the Murphy proposal and makes a conforming change to the striking of some rules later in the proposal. Rule 19 comes from Senator Murphy, and it specifies that the Secretary of the Senate ensures that all messages are delivered in the chamber, and these are the paper messages that are delivered by the pages. This is currently a responsibility assigned to the Sergeant at Arms, but is actually carried out by the Secretary of the Senate. and Rule 20. This comes from the Murphy proposal, and this allows messages from the House to be made electronically available before members move to concur instead of requiring them to be made only available on paper. In Rule 22, this comes from our Murphy proposal. It makes a conforming change to striking the rule on the Committee of the Whole. And there are some changes to general orders, but that will remain a list of bills that have received a second reading. Rules 23 on Committee of the Whole, Rule 24 on the calendar of all bills, and Rule 25 on the consent calendar are stricken in their entirety. Rule 26 is a conforming change to striking the Committee of the Whole, and those are all from the Murphy proposal. Rule 28 is also from the Murphy proposal and adds a cross-reference to Rule 29 change. And Rule 29 specifies that the motion to adjourn sine die is subject to debate, amendment, and subsidiary motions. Rule 32 is also from the Murphy proposal and is a conforming change to striking the Committee of the Whole. Rule 33 changes come from a Murphy proposal, Draskowski proposal, which was further amended by a Senator Rest amendment. And this makes conforming changes to striking the calendar and consent calendar rules and specifies that an amendment to an amendment once adopted may be amended. The changes in Rule 35 come from the Senator Murphy proposal by making a conforming change and specifying the question to be asked by the president when the president puts the question of germaneness to the body. The Rule 37 change comes from the Murphy proposal and strikes obsolete reference to officers being absent and requiring an excuse from the being excused from the Senate. So the rule change from Senate Rule 39 comes from a Murphy proposal as amended by an amendment from the subcommittee and an additional change. And this requires members calling for the division of a question to state the proposed division, requires the president to determine if division is possible, and then specify the author determine which portion to vote on first, and then strike some obsolete language relating to a motion to strike. Their changes in Rule 40 come from a Murphy, Rest, and Marty proposals, strikes language relating to COVID-19, allows a member voting remotely during a floor session to be counted in a division, requires a record in the journal when a member votes remotely. It strikes a prohibition on accepting per diem when a member votes remotely on the floor. In Rule 41 and 42, both come from the Murphy proposal and make conforming changes to striking the rule on the Committee of the Whole. In Rule 44, there are changes from the Murphy proposal that strike requirement the bills be engrossed before being transmitted to the House for concurrence. It makes a technical change by adding a reference to resolutions. Make some changes to specify that engrossing and enrolling are done under the authority of the secretary and the engrossing secretary, and moves language from a later rule to require the engrossing secretary to correct mistakes, and makes the engrossing secretary entirely responsible for this. Rule 45 makes a conforming change to Rule 24, and this comes from the Murphy proposal. The changes to Rule 46 come from the Murphy proposal and a new proposal that came into the subcommittee. And this reorganizes the criteria for selecting conference committee members so that a member is no longer required to have voted yes for a bill on the floor, but it is a consideration that the subcommittee makes when appointing members. And it also specifies that the subcommittee on conference committees is not subject to the committee requirements, committee meeting requirements in Rule 12. The changes in Rule 47 come from the Murphy proposal and make conforming changes related to striking the rule on calendar and consent calendar, and strikes obsolete language related to motion related to adjournment of the regular session in an odd-numbered year. Rule 48 changes come from the Murphy proposal and make a conforming change related to striking the Committee of the Whole, and provide that an action on a bill that has not been printed or made available electronically is a waiver of Rule 48.4. Rule 50 is from the Murphy proposal, and it makes a conforming change to striking the Committee of the Whole. Rule 51 comes from the Murphy proposal and a new proposal that came into the subcommittee, and this strikes the language related to the duties of the engrossing secretary that was moved to the Rule 44 that we spoke about earlier. Strikes obsolete language related to long-distance telephone calls because the Senate no longer incurs costs related to long-distance telephone calls because of the use of VoIP. It reorders the months in chronological order. In Rule 52, it comes from the Murphy proposal. It strikes the requirement that the sergeant at arms see that messages in the chambers are delivered promptly, and I noted that change in Rule 19, and strikes obsolete language. In Rule 54, this comes from the Murphy proposal, strikes language related to committee members requesting an action of the Rules Committee be submitted as a Senate resolution. It strikes the requirement that the secretary post notices in a public place in the Capitol, and again requires these things to be posted on the website. It strikes references to the Rules Committee full and exclusive authority and sole and exclusive power over employee matters, because that's not an entirely accurate way of how the Senate operates. It does leave in place the Rules Committee's other authority over employment matters. Senate Rule 55 comes from a champion proposal, and this is the Subcommittee on Ethical Conduct. And the changes in here, there's are a couple of additional changes that were made from the champion proposal. This changes here specify that a complaint made to the Subcommittee on Ethical Conduct is made specifically to the chair. It requires that the chair promptly provide the complaint and the subject, provide the complaint to the subject of the complaint and members of the committee, specifies that the complaints are public, requires the committee to subcommittee to investigate complaints that meet the stated requirements in the rule, prohibits the subcommittee from calling witnesses or taking testimony during the executive session, prohibits recording executive sessions except for upon a vote of three members, and there are four members of the committee, just as a reference. Strikes the provision of authorizing appointment of special counsel to advise the subcommittee, provides a process for dismissal of the complaint if the subcommittee is deadlocked and can't move forward, specifies that the complaint or subject of the complaint may be represented by counsel, but the Senate will not provide counsel or reimburse legal costs, provides a process to withdraw complaints, and specifies that the notice of withdrawal is a public document. The changes to Rule 56 are a modified version of the Senator Pratt and a new proposal. The existing rule talks about potential conflicts of interest and what actions must be taken. Some of the statutory language is inserted here, so instead of having to look up the statute, the relevant language now exists in the Senate rule. And it states that Senate equipment and resources are for purposes of the Senate and the legislature and must not be used for commercial purposes or campaign activity. And the change in Senate Rule 57 is from Senator Drazkowski and includes language from a statute prohibiting accepting employment or receiving compensation or services performed for businesses related to lobbying. And a member may submit a complaint to the Subcommittee on Ethical Conduct alleging violation of this rule.
Thank you very much, Ms. Stengel, and really fine work. Members, are there questions for Ms. Stengel on the resolution before us? Senator Rest.
I would just point out that in going through the summary, you'll see that a number of rules have been missed. Their numbers aren't on there, and it's because if there was any change to them, just to reemphasize, the change was changing shall to must or a capitalization and was not a substantive change in the rule. So that's why if you wonder, well, what happened to 7, 8, and 9, well, no changes were made in those rules.
Thank you, Senator Rest. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think this one is for you, Senator Rest. I believe these were your provisions dealing with committee hearings and what the chair can be doing in committee. Is that correct? You worked on some of that.
Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Johnson. Yes, and I met with and went over what is preferable with regard to that with both Senator Pratt, Senator Drazkowski, Senator Dibble, and to the language that's in here, we have an amendment for the committee to consider that is more permissive in a sense, but then ask for to be transparent, the decorum rules, which are very different, Senator Johnson, from the procedure rules, which are outlined that are in here very, very specifically, and does not prescribe what those protocols, decorum protocols, would be. There was some discussion about whether it shouldn't be totally flexible, even with decorum, and that some of those decorum protocols should be stated in the rules. We did not, the four of us did not see that was necessary, but I would, when we get to that amendment to what's in here, and appreciate, you know, having more discussion about it if you have concerns.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll wait then until that okay. amendment's offered. Thank you for that clarity. You.
Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair, if I could direct your attention to page 34, lines 20 through 24. This talks about a potential conflict of interest that may exist. The member, and I'm assuming the member that is the subject of the inquiry, must prepare a written statement describing the matter. Could that possibly be in conflict with a Fifth Amendment against testifying against oneself? And I'm just wondering if I'm reading this correctly or not. In the event that a member refuses to write a written statement based on a Fifth Amendment reasoning, I would assume there would not be a consequence for that, although this proposal directs the member to do that, to write a written statement. So I don't know if I'm over exaggerating the possibility, but has anyone had a discussion around this potential conflict?
Thank you, Senator Limmer. I have not been a part of a conversation on that subject. Perhaps some of our members have been, but I'm going to turn to Ms. Stengel first. Ms. Stengel.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senator Limmer, I will say that the requirement to write the written statement comes directly out of state statute. It's 10A. I want to make sure I get the statute right. 10A.07, conflict of interest. So that's in statute right now. So that's not a new requirement. Members are already required to do that. So that's not a new requirement on members that's being inserted into laws or into rules. So regardless of whether it's in rules or not, it's already something that members are required to do. As for Fifth Amendment, I don't know that I've done that analysis. My initial thought is, you know, there isn't it's not a crime for the conflict of interest. But again, that's not an analysis that I've done. I don't know that there's been a conversation around that particular piece of it.
Senator Limmer.
I would imagine if a written statement was made, it could have the possibility of eventually affecting someone's term of office. Although it may not be a criminal matter, it may be an ethical matter, but nevertheless, I would imagine if a written statement would not be disclosed, it wouldn't be in the best interest of that particular individual, but nevertheless, it may not necessarily point to a wrongdoing by being silent and not writing a statement. So I even though this may have been a standard in the past, I don't know if this question has ever come up. And so maybe before this moves forward to the floor, maybe we should have some discussion, further expounded discussion on it.
Thank you, Senator Limmer. We are certainly, of course, able to have further discussion about it. I will remind us that what we're putting into the rule is a reflection of what is in statute. And so even if we were to change it here, if there is a problem, and I'm not suggesting there is, but if there were, that we would have other work to do in addition to the work that we're doing with regard to our future permanent rules.
I'm done.
Thank you, Senator Limmer, very much for raising that. All right. Seeing no further discussion, I will entertain amendments. I understand there are amendments. Senator Pappas, first with the hand. Senator Rest. Senator Rest, yeah.
I think Ms. Stengel has it.
We'll be taking up the A6 amendment. It'll be distributed to the members now. And this is a Rest amendment, Senator Rest, when you're ready.
Sure. Madam Chair and Senator Johnson, this deals with the subject that you brought up at the beginning about behaviors and decorum of the in committees. Some of the actions or behavior with a capital B are in Senate rules specifically, and they and Ms. Stengel has gone through them, and they're already in it, in a committee, a member, just like we are doing right now, members who are participating remotely must, when we are voting, they have to click on their microphone, but their camera to show that they are who they are as we are voting. But it also seemed to me, in working with the gentleman I mentioned earlier, that committee chairs should also, or they may also, because this makes it even more permissive, establish the protocols for decorum in a committee that they then communicate to the public after they have consulted with a minority lead in the committee and after the committee itself, committee members have ratified the document and then after that, the chair must make the written procedures available to the public. In any number of circumstances, we've tried to make it a much more general statement without being extremely specific. So the chair could make those written procedures available to the public on the committee page on the Senate website. You could make them available to the public every hearing by having printed copies. They could have them communicate that in any number of other ways when they send out the agenda to a committee hearing. a document or of the protocols could always be attached to it. We at first just thought that we would ask the committee chairs to do this so that members of the public as well as the members of the committee would know what the expectations were going to be for the committee. They do right now, they vary from committee to committee, not the ones that are required about participation for voting and so forth. Those are part of this document, but That's not what we're not talking about procedures in a committee. So what's the difference? Well, here would be examples of protocols, whether water or any kind of beverage, like it is in this committee, is permitted. And it certainly not, it doesn't contradict the Senate rule in the committee, whether food would be available in the committee, whether the committee chair would allow personal photography to be taken during the committee. In some committees, paid lobbyists are allowed to testify remotely from out of the state, out of the country. They can be in Las Vegas gambling, and they just check in to testify. And the rules right now, the procedure rules are silent on that. on the other hand, the procedure rules that are in here require that remote participation, not only by members, but by members of the public, is required, and you have to make that available to them. But these, we thought it could be helpful to the operation of the Senate, not only for the chair to suggest those protocols, but also to do it in consultation with the minority lead on the committee. In the subcommittee, there was discussion about whether decorum protocols should be that the minority lead would have the authority to veto them. And we backed off of that, but certainly required that they be done in consultation. Another suggestion was whether they should be reported to the Rules Committee. In the House, the rules under which and decorum rules as well, under which House committees operate, have to be approved by the Speaker. We have more of a strong chair's ethic in the Senate, and we felt that that was not necessary, appropriate, or even preferable, and that in a process of the committee chair stating some in writing, but stating some decorum protocols in consultation with the leads, and then having a vote of the committee, that was sufficient, both in participation, in communication to members, and respecting that some decorum protocols will differ from committee to committee. And the Senate should not interfere with that. So that's where this was generated from, and where we got here. And I don't think it makes a dictator out of the chair, but it does allow the chair, again in consultation with the minority lead and by a vote of the full committee, to adopt some decorum protocols that will be in place in the committees.
Senator Johnson.
I think all my questions were thoroughly answered. Thank you, Senator Rest.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. Is there any further discussion on the A6 amendment? Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Rest, As I'm looking at it, the key word I think would be decorum protocols that you're talking about. These would be actions or how senators conduct themselves while in a committee, as you have described. Would it go as far as having a chair disallow an amendment that was not germane to the bill at hand?
Madam Chair.
Senator Rest.
And Senator Limmer, the rules with regard to committees do not allow a chair to indicate that an amendment is non-germane. That's not allowed. And so the committee chair does not have the authority, nor can that authority then be questioned, like it is on the floor of the Senate, when the president, under his own authority, he does not need a point of order to be called if he chooses otherwise. That an amendment is not proper, that is, usually it is not germane, and then gives a ruling on it, and that ruling can be questioned. That is not permitted in a committee, period. Now.
Senator Limmer?
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Limmer. Are there other questions? Seeing no further discussion then, Senator Rest renews her motion on the A6 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And those
aye.
Opposed, say no.
Aye.
And that motion is adopted. Are there other amendments? All right.
Yeah,
sure. Senator Johnson.
Do we have one here?
Madam Chair, I do have the A8 amendment.
Senator Johnson moves the A8 amendment. That amendment will be distributed to members. If you'll just pause for one moment, Senator Johnson. Senator Johnson, if you'd like to proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the A8 amendment is an amendment just dealing with the ability to verify individual members' votes when they're voting remotely. Clearly, we have a policy that allows that to happen, but we one of the concerns that my members have are how do we ensure that it is actually the member themselves and that they are engaged in the conversation and debate on the floor and not just phoning it in, if you'll forgive the pun there a little bit. And so this is the ability for members to call into the Secretary of the Senate's office or his designee, and the chamber will be able to hear his voice at that point. And so people would understand that is the member and that what their vote is. And so just a simple, doesn't cost the Senate any money, it's not a technology buy or anything like that, but just simply gives a process while we're in the interim developing what our long-term plan is going to be.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I support this, but I wonder if it needs to be a little bit more specific. Senator Drazkowski, Senator Pratt, and I met with, or attempted to meet, actually it was Senator Drazkowski that only got the chance to meet, with Patrick Murphy of the House, because they have a fairly simple, low-tech method of getting away from proxy voting, which I think has been a burden, if not a nuisance, on the floor. And their system is that members have buddies. And so when a member is voting remotely, they will call into their buddy, and they will and the chief clerk will call on them and their name, and their buddy will hold up their phone to the microphone and say, and when the chief clerk calls on Senator Rest, then their buddy holds up their phone to which the remote member has called and says, Senator Rest votes aye. And I don't know that we need that specificity here, but I understand from meeting with Senator Joskowski this morning that the phone systems that we use are, we want things to be both reliable and secure, and that it would not take but a few days to set something up like that for the Senate. That we had talked earlier about using biometrics, but they have gone out of fashion, if you will. People don't use those anymore. When I say people, organizations, let's say, are like ours, and that if you're if your amendment here means reporting the member's own vote in their own voice, if that's what you're, which I think is what we want, that and I guess it is there in the second line where you say that the member's voice must be audible to the members of the Senate, and that is achieved over in the House by holding your buddy holding their phone up, and you speak in it, and then the, like we do now in the Senate, the president or the chief clerk over there would repeat it. So like we do with proxy voting, then you wouldn't need the proxy, but it certainly would be repeated by the president of the Senate. So I actually, with that second sentence, seems to me that concern is met, both for reliability, for security, and as a trust measure, because although we may say, well, of course we believe Senator Kunesh that she's gotten the votes just then, or we believe Senator Jasinski. You take trust out of it by having the members speak in their own voice, and you assume that the AI is not operating here to distort your voice. And I mean, who knows? But we're assuming that doesn't happen, and that the secretary's phone system is secure in that regard. And I'm not sure that this would be the that language, but I like it, and I'll be voting for it.
Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair, and I know Senator Champion had something, but maybe to this point, I do have a different amendment that might more specifically address the concerns that you have, Senator S. So if I may, Madam Chair, withdraw the A8.
Senator Johnson withdraws the A8 amendment.
And I will propose the A11.
Senator Johnson proposes the A11 amendment.
While we're doing that, Madam Chair, how many people do we have voting remotely in this meeting?
Senator Rest, thank you for your question. There are two people in the Zoom voting remotely.
Can you tell me their names?
Senator Miller and Senator Frentz are with us in the Zoom, and you can see them.
I see them now.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Johnson, did you want to speak to your amendment? And then I have Senator Champion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this just clarifies a little bit more, making sure that the members in the chamber can hear the voice of the person who will be voting. So to that point of Senator Rest's, that's the language here.
Senator Champion.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for this discussion. Members, I think that this A11, which was originally discussed as the A8, is well-meaning, but I think there's a problem with it. I think there's a problem. One is that when we attempt to do a good thing but don't do all the other background work that it takes, and so I recognize that Senator Rest, you know, agrees with certain things, but let me just explain why I would hope that we would not do the A11 amendment at this time. One is that we have a current method that's in place for a reason. One is because it works and because you have a designated clearinghouse for someone to articulate with clarity what a person thinks, and they always know how to vote. Like if there's a designee and they are having that interaction. The challenge is with the House's buddy system, and I can't believe that we're actually thinking about modeling what we want to do after the House, but that's a whole nother question, is because when you go to a buddy system, what you're now doing is you're complicating it, because one, now you have to identify who the buddy is. Two, the president as well as the secretary has to know who is the buddy for who. Secondly, it jeopardizes the vote of the very person that's on the phone. What if that buddy's in the hallway talking to someone else and not able to do all the work that they need to in order to make sure that they're conferring that person's vote? And now we have time on the floor where, you know, people are in the hallway because constituents are talking to them, or they're on the telephone. Like I know when we waited for people on the telephone. And the other reason is because what if a person is in a conference committee and therefore can't be on the floor? Now you have another problem. So I believe, you know, we have, and when we talk about elements of trust, why wouldn't we want to trust it? We trust a system that we're trusting that the person who's on the other side of the line that we're trusting that is the person. So we have members who are ethical, trustworthy, and reliable. And again, the notion of time, because sometimes we're on the floor, and when people are not there, we're waiting, people are having private discussions. It further complicates what I believe is something that is well-intentioned. And I don't think that we should do it at this point. Do I think we should explore it and talk about it and do those things? Absolutely. But I just don't think that this is the best vehicle or mechanism to use in order to make sure that we are improving in reliability. I believe our members and those who are designated as the designees to talk about it, whether it's Senator Kunis or Senator Jasinski, I think that the method works. So thank you. I hope that you would oppose the A11 amendment.
Thank you, Senator Champion. And there's an issue that I did not raise for the Rules Committee that is related to this. So I just want to make sure that the full Rules Committee knows that in the subcommittee, we moved a resolution that instructs Secretary Bodern to, over the interim, explore digital mechanisms for remote voting. And in my experience, serving both in the House and now in the Senate, in this post-COVID period, if we are going to proceed with remote voting and in the proposed rules before us, we envision the continuation of remote voting in some form or fashion, that a digitized mechanism, a secure mechanism, would better serve the interest of the institution, and investing the time in exploring that and having the secretary bring that proposal back to us for consideration after the interim. That would allow us then to each be casting our votes in a secure fashion. Makes more sense to me than either the method that is being used in the House or the method that we've adopted, which, you know, we're using, and I think to your point, Senator Champion, we are using it with integrity. I don't think that the method that the Senate has adopted in the COVID period is a method that is not with integrity. I think it has integrity. But as this issue has emerged and as I have talked with the Secretary, I think it is right for us to do that exploration about a different method than one that is being used in either body right now. And I neglected to let the Rules Committee know that that is an issue that we have sent to the Secretary for exploration in the interim. And to this point, I think that is an important relevant factor. Thank you. Senator Champion.
Thank you. I think that makes sense. I think it makes sense for Secretary Botter and an interim to look at our system, to see what's possible, and to come with a recommendation that we can truly wrestle with. I just think, again, that this is a well-intentioned amendment, but I just think that we're putting the cart before the horse. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Champion. Senator Rest.
Thank you. Well, I couldn't disagree more. I think we can do this now. We can do it within 3 or 4 days. We can set up this system. Other than what happened the other day when so many members were voting remotely, it's very unusual that more than two or three are doing that. It is not cumbersome. It is a streamlined thing that we could do prior to the Secretary giving us a system that reflects the sense, I don't have it in front of me, but the resolution that we passed. This is not high tech, but it is. It's not just trust, it's trust and verify. And how you verify it is speaking in your own voice. And that is what this calls for. It is not cumbersome in the House, and I don't see that it's cumbersome here. We're only talking about people who are voting remotely. Everybody else has to be at their desk voting. And if that means, and the president does that, often with signals from staff and so forth, that somebody is on their way to vote, and they vote with their at their desk, like the rules require them to do. So, people who are voting remotely, they're usually, and they have to report to the president, and it's part of the. Part of the record, where they're voting from, whether they're voting from Mankato, whether they're voting from Winona or St. Paul or otherwise. I don't see this as a burden. I see it as an attempt to increase the transparency and that we it is not about entrusting the integrity of an individual. It is about entrusting the integrity of the system. So I don't find the objections to it compelling at all.
Senator Champion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I appreciate the wisdom and the experience of Senator Rest, but I could not disagree with her more around whether it's cumbersome and to suggest that verifying someone's voice and their vote seems to suggest that the method that's in place is unethical, or as if we can't trust the senators in place who are the remote voters. Secondly, it is very cumbersome. Just the thought of it, to find a cross-section of people who are buddies and to now put the phone up to a microphone, now you're trusting that the person on the other line is, in fact, who we say it is. And if we can believe that the person who's holding up the phone saying that it's Senator Champion on the line, and if that is a reliable, then why wouldn't we trust the person that's in place right now? I'm not suggesting that it may be something that becomes feasible and possible. I just believe and feel like we don't have enough information, and I think the method that has been put forward as far as to let the secretary explore this notion and come back makes sense. So with that being said, if the A11 is not withdrawn, then I would request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Thank you, Senator Champion. I will just make a couple of remarks because this is an issue that has sort of been a thread throughout the work of the adoption or the drafting of the permanent rules. And the first is the reflection of the House and the buddy system that they use. And of course, they have adopted a different proposal. They have a different method. I think the Speaker is the only person in the House who can allow remote voting. I don't know that she allows very many remote voters. So I think it's the disposition is different. I'll also say the buddy system in the House is what they use to allow one another to vote for each other on the floor, which is something that is strictly forbidden in the Senate, and wouldn't want to get any closer to that buddy system of the House, as I have really admired and appreciate the fact that we are casting our own votes in the Senate, in the chamber, and we are not allowing other buddies to cast those votes for us. I agree with you, Senator Champion, that whether it is a phone to a microphone or Senator Frentz, for instance, reporting my vote, that those, I think, reflect the same integrity and intention of the remote voter being away from the chamber but casting their ballot. So while I appreciate the intention here, I'm not sure that it really represents an advancement. And the last thing I will say, and I don't want to speak out of turn for Secretary Bodern and the nonpartisan staff at the front desk, but when we implemented the rules in the House a number of years ago that represented some significant change, we did it at the start of the session, and I remember the pale faces of then Chief Clerk Al Mathewitz and Patrick Murphy, who was the second in command at the time, and how hard it was for them to continue to do the work that they already do to serve the body and to do it while making substantive changes. And while I appreciate that this isn't necessarily viewed as a substantive change, I think at this point in the session, and by the time these rules would be adopted, we would be in the last few weeks of the session when we are processing the most work on the floor, amendments and votes on a variety of things, than to ask the front desk and our nonpartisan staff to go with us to adopt a new procedure for voting, I think is asking a great deal of them without a marginal difference in the outcome. And so for all of those reasons, I would ask that we respectfully vote against the A11 amendment and instead pursue a method that befits the Senate chamber and our tensions better once we understand what we are learning from Secretary Bodern over the interim. Are there other comments? There's been a roll call requested.
Madam
Senator
Chair.
Johnson?
If we could, for just one moment, I think to add some clarity to it, could we just take 5 minutes? Senator Drazkowski is in the chamber here, and they did that field trip over to the House to do a little investigating. Could we hear briefly from Senator Drazkowski on this issue?
Senator Johnson, I would be happy to have Senator Drazkowski join us. Senator Drazkowski has been, he is, I think, in large part the reason we are moving these proposed permanent rules in his insistence at the start of this term, and I appreciate that. He's also been a part of the subcommittee, and I've been a part of some of the subcommittee on rules, a part of some of the discussions that he's been having, particularly with Senator Rest. Welcome to the committee, Senator Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Johnson, as well. So in our subcommittee discussion, members, we were talking about this, and so I organized a meeting with Patrick Murphy, the chief clerk of the House. The meeting was held yesterday. Senator Rest and Pratt and all of the rest of the senators that were members of the subcommittee were invited. Fortunately, we did have staff there. Secretary Bodern was there and his staff. Council Stengel was there. Madam Chair's staff were there to hear what happened and how the House works. And like you, Madam Chair, I was a member of the House even more recently than you. And that took me through the process of COVID and how remote voting emerged and evolved there. And as we began over there, it was Zoom. And you were on Zoom. And I can tell you, as a member on the floor both then and later on, when you hear the member's voice in person in your own ear, the trust is 100%. It's not 99%. It's not 70%. It's 100%, and it just brings certainty and, I think, unity to the process. Now, yesterday, the chief clerk in the House described what they have evolved to over there, which Senator Rest described earlier, I think quite well, as quite simple was a word that he said. The technology part is very simple, and you might ask Secretary Bodern what he maybe had more time to reflect on what it would take his staff to do it here, but he, at least yesterday, didn't see anything from the technology end, as they haven't seen in the House that would be an issue, and suggested it might take a few days to update the journal approach. But beyond that, very simple to implement, and you know, the discussion about, you know, members being out in the hall or somewhere else. I mean, we got that same concern now with, you know, in this case, Senator Kunesh and Senator Jasinski have to be there. I don't think that would really change a lot. But it's easy to do. And it's certain. And the trust, I think, brings unity to the body. By the way, they in the House now only have about 1 to 3 members per session that do vote remotely. It's diminished over time. And the way this language is written here, it's not the same language they have in the House, but it's the same spirit in that it's open and gives the control to the Secretary to determine how that is achieved. And that's what they did in the House as well. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members.
Thank you, Senator Drazkowski. I was just handed a section of the rules from the House where they have put in their rules how remote voting is allowed. And it is only with the permission of the speaker and only under very certain small circumstances. That is different than what we have chosen to do in the Senate, where the minority leader and the majority leader, in their own judgment, are able to make decisions about remote voters. I think that's preferable to giving that full authority to one member. In this case, it would be the majority leader. It is the reason why I think they have fewer remote voters at times than we do. Perhaps. And again, I appreciate and thank you, Senator Drazkowski, for coming with the report from the House chamber and your experience in mine over in the House. It is a different body, absolutely, and one I have great respect for. But I also am a member of this body, and our culture is different. And I again would ask that members vote to defeat the A11 amendment. Seeing no further discussion, there's been a roll call. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Murphy?
No.
Vice Chair Rest?
Yes.
Lee Johnson?
Yes.
President Champion?
No.
Senator Eichhorn?
Aye. Senator Frantz?
No.
Senator Limmer?
Yes.
Senator Marty?
No.
Senator Miller?
Aye.
Senator Pappas?
No.
There being five ayes and five noes, the amendment fails. Are there further amendments, members? Senator Johnson?
I do have one more. It's not prepared amendment. I'd like to move an oral amendment.
Senator Johnson, please proceed with your oral amendment.
Thank you. And just to set the table a bit, you just gave a good example of kind of the difference between us and the House as far as our ability to allow members to remote vote. And we've got quite a range of discretion on that. However, I think there should be some expectation that we're not allowing remote voting for, a personal preference day or vacation or something like that. But these are actual legitimate issues that make it very, very difficult for members to be out or to be in the chamber and actually voting there. And so I'm looking at page 24, line 13, after leader, just inserting for reasons related to health or safety of the member or the member's family.
Page 24, line 13.
So that's page 24, line 13, after leader, insert for reasons related to the health or safety of the member or the member's family.
Senator Johnson has moved an oral amendment on page 24 of the proposed permanent rules. I'm going to turn to Ms. Stengel to repeat the amendment so we are clear together about what is before us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The amendment is to the document labeled SR029SUB in the upper right-hand corner on page 24, line 13, after leader, insert, for reasons related to the health or safety of the member or the member's family.
Senator Johnson, is that clear?
Yes, thank you.
Senator Rest.
Senator Johnson, I would hope that you would also specifically state with this that it would include members' health, family, whatever, but also including military service.
Certainly.
I don't know how that would fit, but I can't imagine anybody would object to that, but it would give some comfort for those who do have the need on occasion to be absent and still can vote remotely while they are in military service. I'm sure Ms. Stengel could help with where the words would go there.
If we may,
Senator Johnson.
Sorry, Madam Leader, if we may amend the oral amendment to include that.
Ms. Stengel.
I believe Senator Johnson would like to incorporate or military service into his oral amendment. So the oral amendment would be on page 24, line 13, after leader, insert, for reasons related to the health or safety of the member or the member's family or military service.
Senator Johnson, does that reflect your amendment?
Certainly does, Madam Chair.
Did you have anything more that you wanted to say about your amendment?
No, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pappas.
I just want to clarify for the record that does that apply military service to just the member, or does it include military service for the member and their family? I'm assuming it was just the member because it's at the end of the sentence, but I just wanted to check with Ms. Stengel on that.
Thank you, Senator Pappas. Ms. Stengel.
Senator Pappas, that's a good question. I would seek clarification from Senator Johnson on what his intent is for that.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Council Stengel. I would say that it was for just the member. The intent is just for the member themselves.
That's the, I hate to say this word now, but that's the intention, that it's just the member.
Maybe putting military service at the beginning.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rest.
I'm trying to see it, the language now in front of me, and I see Senator Pampas's point, because we had just said the member's family, or military service. And her suggestion, I think, is that if we begin with military service, then it's much clearer that it is to the member. So military service or health and welfare of the member and their family, or whatever that language is. If we change the order of it, then it's much clearer who it refers to, without changing the words, just the order in which they are presented and what the phrase modifies.
Thank you, Senator Rest, and we'll just give counsel the time necessary to draft the oral amendment in a way that reflects the intention, but the work that we're doing here. Thank you, Ms. Stengel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this point, I think it might be best if Senator Johnson just withdrew his original motion, and then we'll make a clean motion.
Senator Johnson?
Thank you. So you're saying this is clear as mud right now for us? Okay.
Yes.
I will withdraw my original motion, and we will move forward with the wording that Council Stengel has put together here.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. Ms. Stengel.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Johnson. I'll read something and you tell me if this sounds right. On page 24, line 13, after leader, insert, for the member's military service or for reasons related to the health or safety of the member or the member's family.
Senator Johnson.
Yes, that is the intent and language, I think. Sounds good. We'll go with that.
Senator Johnson moves an oral amendment on page 24 of SR029-SUB. I'd ask Ms. Stengel to read it one more time for us, please.
Madam Chair, on page 24, line 13, after leader, insert, for the member's military service or for reasons related to the health or safety of the member or the member's family.
Are there questions or comments on the oral amendment?
Madam Chair, I just would like to know what Senator Murphy thinks about this.
Thank you, Senator Pappas. This, from my perspective, reflects the culture and the expectation that I think the leaders of each caucus have been operating under, that we are to be here and voting unless there is a health or safety reason or the military service. I know that we have at least two members who have active presence in military service. And so while I always feel some trepidation about adopting a change like this without much consultation or thought, and sometimes that does get us into trouble. From my perspective, this does reflect what I understand has been the expectation for our members as we've been working through this session. All right. Seeing no further discussion, Senator Johnson has moved an oral amendment on page 24, line 13 of SR029-SUB. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 And those opposed, say no. And that motion is adopted. All right. I am not seeing any further amendments coming forward from our members. Senator Rest. Senator Rest.
I would direct members
to the page in advance and saying about remote voters receiving a per diem, and where that was stuck in the language. Is that 24 as well?
Senator Rest, is your mic on?
Yes.
So where is it? In 24 and 25, we would now just want to make sure that I understand that as of the date of this, we passing these new rules, that a member who is voting remotely is eligible, if they choose, to receive per diem without having to state it any other way.
Ms. Dangle?
Thank you, Senator Rest and Madam Chair, for the opportunity to correct some perhaps bad information that I gave at the last subcommittee hearing about the effective date of when rules go into effect. There was some conversation at the last subcommittee hearing about when rules go into effect. Upon further conversations I've had with some of the desk staff in the past, when rules have been adopted, they go into effect immediately. So unless there was other direction given, when these rules were adopted, they would go into effect immediately, which would mean that the change in per diem would go into effect immediately. There could be a change to that if specific direction were given otherwise.
Just wanted to.
It could be done differently, but
clarify.
Absent specific direction, it would go into effect immediately.
Thank you.
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, there had been some discussion at the Rules Subcommittee meeting about retroactivity. If not to the beginning of when we first adopted this, at least to the beginning of this session, because of, you know, it might be too financially complicated to go back a fiscal year. Has any of that been given any thought by yourself or Senator Johnson?
Thank you, Senator Pappas. I know that Senator Rest has been engaged in a fairly substantive conversation about that matter.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Pappas. Certainly among the subcommittee members, when it became clear that lines 24, 24, and 24, 25 were going to be struck, and knowing that at least from the time forward from the being passed, that having an amendment saying this is fine, but it's only going to take effect in January of 2025, or going back to January 2023, that neither one of those was particularly palatable, or that's not the right word, but yeah, maybe it's feasible, but there's also a sense of fairness that raises a question, and that I don't have an amendment right now, but it seems to me that allowing per diem for the beginning of this session, starting in February, would be is kind of a middle ground for that. And of course, members, anytime we take per diem, it's only with our own consent. No one is forced to take per diem, and but we do recognize extraordinary circumstances, and it seems to me that the fair thing to do, if a member requests it, would be to allow per diem for remote voters starting at the beginning of this session. That wouldn't affect but a couple of people who have are voting remotely for the very reasons that Senator Johnson wanted put into the rule that we did right now, military service and a member's own health and welfare and that of their family. And Madam Chair, I really think we should take care of that, but I don't have an amendment unless Ms. Stengel could draft that quickly enough that that particular item would allow members to request per diem beginning with the first day of the of this session, which is Ms. Stengel, February what? 12th. February 12th. I don't know how to achieve that. Whether it is could simply be not put in the rules because it just affects something that's quite temporary, or whether it's more proper to bring it up in as a separate motion once the rules have been adopted, and maybe it can come back to the Rules Committee at that time, that we wouldn't need that amendment to the rules here, but we could have it as a motion before the Rules Committee after we adopt the rules on the floor. I mean, in terms of timing things, but that would certainly be my intent. And I think it's fair and reasonable.
Thank you, Senator Rust. This is also an issue that was emerged. We didn't have a lot of discussion, but emerged in the subcommittee. So Ms. Stengel has done just the lightest amount of understanding of how we might effectuate that if we chose to do so. Ms. Stengel.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Rust. I just had a brief conversation with Secretary Bodern about this, and we believe at this point in time, after brief discussion, so this answer might change upon further discussion, that the way to achieve any sort of retroactivity of the per diems would be to adopt a separate resolution on the Senate floor that would allow members to claim per diem retroactively and to do that after the rules were adopted.
Thank you.
Senator Rust.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Ms. Stengel. I do think it's important to prepare members if the rules are adopted that such a resolution may be coming forward and that it would be supported unanimously by the Senate.
Thank you, Senator Rust. Senator Pappas?
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Pappas.
All right, well, seeing no further amendments, then I would move the adoption of SR-029.
You can't make a motion.
I'm sorry. That's right. I can't make a motion.
I can make it, though.
Members, before we make a motion, as I am reminded that I can't make a motion as the chair, Senator Rust, I love your commitment to the rules. I do. And I wanted to say that, and no kidding aside, the rules guide our work. They're pretty fundamental to how we operate together. And they can be at times very contentious. I've experienced very contentious discussions about rules, and legislative bodies, certainly the Congress, are viewed, I think, by the public often as slugfests and contentious bodies that can't get along and don't get along, and sometimes at their expense. And I just want to remark on how we have worked our way through this to this point before we entertain a motion from Senator Rust, that there has been a lot of painstaking work working through issues that we don't necessarily see eye to eye on, but finding a path forward to, you know, a proposed set of permanent rules that may or may not enjoy complete support of this committee, but do reflect the very good work of members of the subcommittee and this committee. And I just think that is an important thing to acknowledge in a time when more of what our work looks like is very divided. This is a reflection, I think, of how this body actually functions and works together. So I just wanted to acknowledge that, thank everybody. I see Senator Drazkowski again. You were the one who were urging us and hoping that we would take this up at the start of the term. I think that's really important, and I want to acknowledge you and thank you for that. And with that, I'd be happy to entertain a motion. Senator Rust.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the Rules Committee adopt the Senate Resolution SR029-SUB as amended this day, and period, because therefore it would then go to the floor.
Senator Rest moves SR029-SUB
as amended.
As amended. Are there any questions? Seeing no questions, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And those opposed, say no. And that motion is adopted. Members, there is one more document before us, and this is the work that the subcommittee had done around instruction to the Secretary of the Senate, identifying a remote voting system for us, and that is SCR009-SUB. It is in your packet if you take a look at that, and perhaps, Senator Rest, when you're ready, you could make a motion on this as well.
Madam Chair, I move that the Rules Committee adopt and forward the committee resolution numbered SCR009-SUB, and it relates to a report required from the Secretary's office over the interim to initiate protocols and rules for remote voting. That offers both security and identification, and those are the two things that are most important to us. That's how you establish trust, is by having a system that is secure. And in this instance, the identification features of each of us as members are present, security and reliability, and have it ready to go by the first day of the legislative session beginning in January of 2025. And this was a resolution that was, Madam Chair, that was endorsed by the members of the subcommittee. This is not anything new. We talked about it, if not at length, at least we talked about it publicly, and there was no disagreement that the Secretary would be able to do this.
Thank you.
And some of us think it could have been done earlier, but okay, we didn't do that. But we can certainly have this motion to have it ready, ready to go in January of 2025.
Thank you, Senator Rust. Are there questions? And seeing no questions, Senator Rest renews her motion on SCR009-SUB. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, say no. And that motion is adopted. And with that, members, it concludes our business. The Rules Committee is adjourned. Thank you for your hard work. Thank you.